The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome to NFL Live, everyone. Week 7 already underway, but we have some breaking news to get to, and that's where we begin today. Saints wide receiver Emmanuel Sanders has tested positive for COVID-19. And just about an hour ago, head coach Sean Payton addressing the situation with the media, he was asked specifically if he thought that Sanders contracted the virus because there were some players at practice not wearing masks. Listen to what Sean Payton said about Sanders' situation and the entire situation for the team right now.
None of that. Protocols have been outstanding. He got this at home. He knows exactly how he got it, and I'll leave it at that. It's part of the deal this year. We've talked about the distractions and focusing on the things you can control. Last night we spent a lot of time relative to how we want to put the plan together in place of him, and we'll do so accordingly.
Field Yates with us now for more on this. And Field, what can you tell us about what's next for Sanders and the Saints?
Yeah, well, sort of some good news, bad news here, Laura, is the bad news, of course, that Emmanuel Sanders is placed on the reserve COVID-19 list, and he is not going to play on Sunday. No matter how he is feeling, he is out for Sunday's game against the Carolina Panthers. Now, the Saints did test 20 or so other individuals that have been in some level of contact with Emmanuel Sanders in recent days, and all of them have turned up negative. But only one of them, Ken Crawley, a cornerback, will be placed on the reserve COVID-19 list because of exposure to Emmanuel Sanders. So while this hasn't had a tremendous ripple effect on the rest of the organization, we're going to follow this one closely because, as we know, it feels like every Friday, Laura, you and I are starting the show talking about a COVID situation permeating around a team, around the NFL. But no Emmanuel Sanders on Sunday for the Saints, and most likely no Michael Thomas as well. They're star wide receiver who has been out since week one because of an ankle injury and then, of course, disciplinary reasons for their last game 2 weeks ago. He now has a hamstring issue that's cost him practice on Thursday and Friday. So no one would have imagined this, but we are very likely looking at the possibility of being about halfway through the regular season and Michael Thomas having just 17 receiving yards on Sunday. It's going to be Drew Brees throwing plenty to Alvin Kamara, Jared Cook, Tre'Quan Smith, and some other young players who will need to step up in New Orleans.
Field Yates, you'll stay with us for the remainder of this show. Some other injury updates to tell us about later on. But we've also got some other people here. Keyshawn Johnson, Mina Kimes, and Marcus Spears getting the specs ready for the show. So let's start with you, Key. When you hear this news, and you heard Sean Payton just say it, they were game planning with Sanders throughout the week. They've had to adjust, and they feel like they've got a game plan in without him and probably without Michael Thomas. How difficult is it to make that adjustment this close to game time on Sunday?
Well, for Sean Payton, it's really not going to be that difficult. Everybody can kind of move around within the West Coast system. You can farm mate guys and put them in different spots. Jared Cook all of a sudden becomes an X receiver, even though he's a tight end. He becomes that individual guy that has a big body. Tre'Quan Smith can also do some things. They can do some things with Alvin Kamara. So when you start to look at what they're capable of doing, they still have a little bit of firepower, although they would like to have Sanders and Thomas back in the lineup. Now, I'm sure they game plan with Thomas not being in the lineup. I'm almost certain they game plan without Thomas being in the lineup.
You might know, yeah. Mina, what do you think?
This is challenging, man. And part of the reason I picked New Orleans in this game originally was because, while I think this Panthers defense is surprisingly feisty, kind of way better than they have any right to be. They've struggled against running backs, seventh against the run. They've also struggled against passes to running backs. The problem is it's a lot easier to stop Alvin Kamara when you know the football is going to Alvin Kamara over and over and over. Someone else is going to have to emerge in this game. I wouldn't be surprised if we get some Taysom Hill shenanigans as well. Didn't hear his name mentioned, but it's a challenge. I mean, Key's right. From a game planning perspective, I trust Sean Payton. I think this system will work, but it's you run out of guys there in New Orleans.
I like what Traquan has done in the absence, but the bottom line is this, and I think it's going back to the point Keyshawn made, is that with Sean Payton and Drew Brees, they'll figure out a way to game plan and get the ball in the hands of the people that they want to. And we know Alvin Kamara is going to be heavily involved because he's heavily involved in every game plan. But I expect Jared Cook to have a big day. I expect him to use this tight end in a significant role as far as catching the ball downfield. Listen, for all intents and purposes, last year, if you guys go back to when the New Orleans Saints played San Francisco, before Jared Cook got injured, he was the featured guy in that offense in that particular game plan. So I expect that to be a big part of what they do this Sunday against the Carolina Panthers and try to stretch these linebackers and safeties and make them play some one-on-one football.
You know, Mina, all year long, it feels like we've been talking about Drew Brees struggling and maybe he doesn't look as good from the arm strength standpoint, whether you really buy into that or not. Maybe not the Drew Brees that some people expected. Coming up, obviously, Carolina this Sunday, then at Chicago, then at Tampa Bay. That's a next three for the Saints. How long can they sustain Thomas's absence? And then who knows who else they get back and get healthy in time to play?
Yeah, those two defenses you just named, I mean, and the Bucs and the Bears, those are two of the three best defenses in the NFL, in my opinion. Okay, so it gets much more challenging. I said I like Carolina and they're feisty, but they are not in the same tier as those groups. Marcus is absolutely right to talk about Jared Cook. But for as much as we've criticized Drew Brees for arm strength, you know, air yards and all that, he also hasn't been on the same page as Jared Cook. It's actually been kind of confusing at times during the season. You've seen miscommunication between him and receivers he's been playing with. They're going to have to be on the same page if they don't have Michael Thomas, because he's all he's got. They have literally no other option.
At some point in time, they're going to have to get Michael Thomas back in the lineup. There's no question about it. You can only live for so long without your top offensive threat. You may be able to get through half the season, but as the season wears on, as Mina mentioned, you start to see the Chicago Bears and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, two of the top three or four defenses in the National Football League, and they have shut down players over there. And, hey, I'm going to tell you this. If they don't get him back sooner rather than later, New Orleans may be looking on the outside.
Yeah, Marcus, I mean, it felt like going into this season, the Saints were all in on trying to win a Super Bowl. Some of us here thought they would be a Super Bowl favorite. Now, where are you at with them?
Listen, I go back to what Key is saying. We know Michael Thomas is a generational talent. Let's get that out first and foremost. But I think people miss sometimes when they're talking about what Mike does for this offense as far as opening up the rest of the field for everybody else. Alvin Kamara, as good as he is a better player when Michael Thomas is on the field. Jared Cook is a better player. Traquan Smith is a better player. Emmanuel Sanders was actually supposed to be the piece to complement Michael Thomas and take this offense to another level in which they felt like they needed in order to make a push at the NFC Championship and winning the Super Bowl. So the moment they get these guys back, it'll be a far better team. But when we get to the point where we start talking about Michael Thomas, he changes the dynamic of how they play football. Not just a piece you put in to be a better offense, or you adding a better player, he changes everything about how everybody else is going to defend the New Orleans Saints. So until he gets back, we won't really know what this team is. So hurry up, Mike. They need you bad, bro.
Hey, yeah. Laura, it's a reason he had 140-some-odd catches.
Well,
this,
hello.
This is a reason.
Right, yeah, there's a reason why he wants to continue to be the best on that team as well. By the way, the Saints 3-2, I think all this looks a lot different if they beat the Panthers, but we'll have to see how that shakes out. Talk about the wild, wild NFC East. My goodness. The Eagles trailed the Giants 21-10 with 6 minutes, 17 seconds left in the fourth quarter. Philly then scores twice in the game's final 5 minutes to secure the comeback. As you might imagine, Doug Peterson and Carson Wentz were like, man, that was a relief to get that win. It's a relief to get any win in the NFC East. We're all still trying to figure all that out. Anyway, Key, what did you take away from Wentz's performance last night?
I mean, okay, so first of all, let me say this. It was the Giants. But okay, he did what he was supposed to do. You know, he delivered the football in sync at times. And he looked like a $128 million quarterback. But it was the Giants.
There's the butt.
And when you look at it, though, he made a couple bonehead plays that made you scratch your head, but he also made a bunch that made you go, okay, I see what they're talking about when he gets the time and the opportunity. And that was the key. Late in the game, hitting Boston Boston Scott on the wheel route against Jabril Peppers for the touchdown. Also finding Ward in the corner on the speed out. So when you start to look at those sort of things, you're like, okay, he's good. I mean, he's good. As long as you can protect him, he's good. But it was the Giants.
It's a big but, Marcus.
I just always want to know if Carson Wentz is going to stay in the space of being the guy that is worthy of that contract that Key mentioned. Or is he going to have two or three times a game where you like, what in the hell is this dude doing? Because that rollout and that throw up in the end zone was one of the most perplexing plays I've seen all season long. No reason to. The second thing is Carson Wentz is athletic. I don't understand why he panics so much in certain situations. Now, on the flip side, he made throws, and I got to give my boy Dan some love because, you know, he probably sitting there smiling, and he was nervous as hell if they lost this game to the Giants. I was hoping he'll, like, make a guest appearance in case they lost. He makes those throws where you say, who? It's only a few guys in the league that can do that. And that's the Carson Wentz that Philly is going to need. Let's be honest, y'all. Like he said, that's the Giants. But if you plan on winning this division and continuing on and having a shot in the playoffs, Carson Wentz is going to have to be 85 to 90% of the guy that got the $120-something million contract as opposed to it being maybe 60-40.
I think that's an accurate sort of assessment of Carson Wentz. He did some boneheaded stuff. He made some beautiful throws. I actually found myself a little bit more frustrated last night with Doug Peterson and some of the play calling in the red zone, particularly on that series in the fourth quarter. They were down 14-10. You got three runs. There's an option to hurt. Actually didn't mind that. Now we're going to get a draw. Okay, and here's where I lost my damn mind, Marcus. Fourth down, what do you do? The lowest percentage it play in football. The goal line fade. My life's mission, you guys. If you're everyone, please listen. Stop calling the goal line fade. It doesn't work, okay? It almost never works. And if you're gonna call it, which you shouldn't, don't call it to a tight end. They changed his position. A tight end who prior to that moment had as many snaps, not targets, snaps for the Philadelphia Eagles as me, Mina Kimes. Why would you throw it to Hakeem Butler in that moment, Doug Peterson? What were you thinking? I'm glad you won, but that had me pulling my hair out.
Mina hates the goal line fade, if you haven't figured it out. The Eagles have now won 8 straight games against the Giants. Sorry, Giants, that's the second longest streak in the series. All right, let's get to some injuries and some other things we need to know. Field Yates now here for that. Some crucial injuries, in fact, we're not doing that. We're actually going to Daniel Jones falling down, which should be an injury itself, but I'm glad he's okay. So let's see that instead. Come on, guys. Daniel Jones is going to run down the field, and I need a full play-by-play on this moment right here. Keyshawn, go. Marcus, what happened?
What happened was, it's everything you expect from Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones is Daniel Jonesing right there. That's exactly what he's doing. Everybody talks about how successful this kid can be athletically if he keeps on hanging on to the ball. This is a perfect situation of what Daniel Jones is giving you right now. Even Saquon, like, that's Daniel Jones.
Mina, what do you think?
I want to be clear. I was not laughing there at Daniel Jones. I was laughing at us calling, cutting to the play instead of injuries. I don't know. He should have faked an injury, though. I got it. Like, if that was me and I was out there and I pulled up like that, I'd be grabbing my hammy, saying, oh, man, I think I tore something in that moment. The thing is that we're overlooking the fact he made an incredible play. Daniel Jones is, like, incredible. Extremely athletic.
He
turned on the Jets.
He was clocked at, like, 21 miles per hour. It's insane. By the way, that, just to be clear, it was fully on me. I was basically Daniel Jones in the show right now trying to get to that. They were telling me to go to it, and I forgot and wanted to go to Phil Yates instead. So I want to be fully clear. As you can see, Look at this, 20-plus mile per hour max speed as a ball carrier. Daniel Jones.
I'm not going to believe that.
He's ahead of Lamar Jackson at 21.2.
I'm never going to believe that.
Why?
I know what it says.
Key, it doesn't lie. He was clocked at 21.2 miles.
I can't believe it.
I ain't gonna believe it.
All right, well,
challenge him to a race.
We really wanted to get Field Yates in here for these injury reports, so let's get right to it and talk to me about some crucial injuries in question. Michael Thomas, an update that you just got.
Yeah, no longer a question there, Lauren. As we suggested during the beginning of the show, Michael Thomas officially out on Sunday for the New Orleans Saints, as both that ankle and that hamstring issue, perhaps more importantly, that hamstring issue that's bothering him. So no Michael Thomas, no Emmanuel Sanders on Sunday for the New Orleans Saints. Now let's get to some other injury updates, and we start with Joe Mixon for the Bengals. Joe Mixon has missed practice all week because of a foot issue. He's officially out on Sunday. Now, what does that mean for the Bengals? It means Giovanni Bernard will step into a familiar role, stepping up as the replacement starter. Check out his mustache if you have not yet already. It's glorious. Aaron Jones for the Green Bay Packers got injured on Thursday during practice. It's a calf issue. And head coach Matt LaFleur said today, despite the fact that Aaron Jones did not practice, this would be more of a questionable than a doubtful designation. Sounds like a game time decision on Sunday for Aaron Jones, but he does have a chance to play. He's been awesome so far this season. Moving along to DeAndre Hopkins, it's an ankle injury. And Laura, get used to this one. He might not practice that much during the week, and it won't matter. Let's be clear, the guy's been incredible. He is going to play on Sunday. He has 601 receiving yards in six games. I'm no math major, but that's over 100 yards per game for DeAndre Hopkins. He will be good to go for the 4-2 Arizona Cardinals, and he might have a day. Sorry, Mina, that Seahawks secondary still leaving a lot to be desired this season.
Yeah, Field, what is also the latest with the Raiders O-line ahead of their game against the Bucs?
Yeah, so as we all know, this is the big situation we're monitoring as it pertains to COVID this week. And 4/5 of their offensive line is on the reserve COVID list, but not because of a positive test. Now, that being said, head coach John Gruden was asked today about the chances he'll have those four starters along the offensive line available on Sunday. He said, I do believe those men have a good chance to play on Sunday. So, we will not see Trent Brown, their right tackle, who remains on the reserve COVID-19 list. But based off the NFL's updated protocols as it pertains to players that have an exposure to somebody else who is positive, there is a good chance we'll see the likes of Colton Miller, their left tackle, and Rodney Hudson, their outstanding center, and the other four starters along that offensive line. And you guys don't need me to remind you that against that Buccaneers defensive front, that is essential. Otherwise, they'd be in big trouble.
Yeah, they've done a really nice job protecting Derek Carr this year as well. So I'm sure he's hoping they can be out there in full force.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Week 7, let's go. Some great ones this week, and you see a lot of them right there. Of course, Steelers and Titans featuring a couple undefeated teams. And let's pick it up right there. Since Ryan Tannehill took over under center, Derrick Henry has rushed for 122 yards per game, 40 yards more than the next closest player in that span. And that's really helped Tannehill. Nearly half of his yards have come via play action. Pittsburgh, of course, will put that to the test with the second lowest completion percentage on such plays. The Steelers will bring offensive firepower of their own as well. They've scored 25 or more points in all five games this season, their longest streak to start a season in franchise history. So who's everybody picking in this one? Well, turns out everybody's picking the same team, which if you're paying attention on this show, when everyone picks the same team, the other team wins. But anyway, you guys are all on the Steelers. And considering that, let's have time for some smart lineup decisions informed by IBM Watson. Marcus, I realize you are picking the Steelers, but let's switch to the Titans. How can the Titans get a win in this one?
It's all about Ryan Tannehill, Els. And listen, I know Derrick Henry is the cachet and people talk about the plays that he's making and the highlights, but Ryan Tannehill has been playing at an elite level up until this point in the season. And against this defense, who's going to try to take the run game away from you, Ryan Tannehill is going to have to show that he can win a Super Bowl with his arm. So I'm looking forward to seeing him perform. Arthur Smith has been doing a tremendous job putting him in great situations, using the pass to affect the run game in a positive way. But this boils down to Ryan Tannehill outdueling Ben Roethlisberger and making sure that he gets these receivers. A.J. Brown, Jonnu ankle is an issue, but if he's in the lineup, and obviously Humphreys, using these guys and being as prolific as the possibility of being with his guys on the other side. I'm looking forward to seeing him perform against this Steelers defense.
I'm with you, Marcus. I love the Ryan Tannehill story. It's like legitimately inspiring. It shows us all you can still, you know, peak in your 30s. And peaking is exactly what he's doing because he's been playing at an MVP level. We talk a lot about Derrick Henry being the engine of this offense. And I think there's this perception that Ryan Tannehill, he's just a play action quarterback. But when he's not using play action, he has the fourth highest passer rating in the NFL. He is the number one passer rating under pressure, which is obviously very important in this game. 7 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. To me, that's a strength-on-strength matchup here. The Titans offense against the Steelers defense. And we're going to learn very quickly which of those sides is more impacted by the major injuries they suffered last week. Because as good as the Steelers defense has been, they've had some lapses in coverage. Now they don't have Devin Bush, their linebacker. That's going to hurt them there. Meanwhile, on the other side of the football, the Titans lost Taylor Lewan, their left tackle. So we're going to see if that affects the offensive line. And I think whichever one of those injuries is more impactful could decide this game.
It is an interesting game, but you got to look at these two quarterbacks. They kind of mirror each other to a degree. Run the football, play action pass, play strong defense, and don't cause any mistakes on the offensive side of the ball. If Tannehill can do that, kind of mirror Ben, because they're similar, they're very similar. He may be a better runner than Ben right now, but in terms of their style, it's very similar.
Yeah, I mean, age.
It really is.
Age could have a factor there, too. And don't worry, Ben, I'm not calling you old. Marcus, talk to me about the Titans' defense. A guy who needs to step up on that defense for you, especially against Big Ben and this Pittsburgh offense that has been high-powered.
Yeah, L. Boogie, listen, this is Jadeveon Clowney. This is the game. This is the reason the Tennessee Titans wanted to sign him and got into that bidding war with the New Orleans Saints to get his services and for him to make impact plays in games like this. The Tennessee Titans have Super Bowl on their mind. We know the mentality that Mike Vrabel has, and he feels like Jadeveon not only needs to apply pressure, which he does a good job of, but he needs to get quarterbacks on the ground, make game-changing type plays, and he's trying to do that personally to solidify the contract that he was looking for initially after the year in Seattle. He's a good football player, but you don't get drafted first overall to just be a good football player. You get drafted first overall to have seasons like Aaron Donald and Myles Garrett. And I don't know if Jadeveon Clowney is ever going to be that. But if he can be, and if he shows that he can be, then he'll get whatever asking price he's asking for. But this is a good game to put yourself on display when you're talking about two undefeated teams trying to make a run at winning a Super Bowl.
Yeah. We've kind of seen why it took Jadeveon so long to sign with the team, frankly, which is that he's a great football player. He's excellent against the run, but he doesn't bring down the quarterback. And honestly, on this Tennessee defense, outside of Jeffrey Simmons, I don't think anyone stepped up in the pass rush department. This is one of the worst pass rushes in the NFL. And that's not going to be enough in this game, especially as quickly as Ben gets rid of the ball, because they've regressed in coverage as well. This has not been a very good defense. The offense has carried this team. They're a well-coached team. They've got talented players, but so far this defense has not played to the level they did last year. So, Marcus, I'm looking at Clowney, but I'm looking at Kevin Byard. I'm looking at, you know, Jayon Brown. Across at every level, the defense needs to step up.
Yeah, guys, this is just the 8th matchup in NFL history featuring 5-0 or better teams. It's kind of crazy to think about. The first one since the Packers and Broncos, they were both 6-0 that in 2015. All right, so definitely was telling you guys that apparently Patrick Mahomes likes to play in the snow, and it's going to be snowy there in Denver. It's snowy here, too. Just kidding. Marcus, what do you think about the Chiefs in another possible snow game? Does it affect their offense in any way?
I mean, obviously, when you check your footing and you make sure everything right, no. Listen, we showed Mahomes highlights, but I think back to Tyreek Hill in the snow, still being able to burn past people and stick his foot in the ground and go the opposite direction. Patrick Mahomes will be fine. They play in Kansas City. We watched them in the playoffs have a lot of success in the snow last season, so I think they'll be fine. It brings a different element, a different challenge, obviously, but when you have a guy like Patrick Mahomes and when you have a offensive coordinator like Arizona and Andy Reid, they'll figure out ways to manufacture yards in the snow in case one of the elements take away something they want to do offensively. I'm not worried about Patrick Mahomes at all in the snow.
Yeah, we also have an additional element for the Chiefs offense. Not like they needed any extra help, but Le'Veon Bell will be playing key for the first time with the Chiefs. What might we see out of him?
You're going to see some pretty good stuff, I promise you that. And here's why, and Marcus can speak to this. In the NFL, players got a few things that they look for. They look to get their money, and they look to get their respect from their coaches. When he joined the New York Jets, he figured, okay, I'll get my money. That means I'm going to get my respect. He lost respect when Adam Gase said what he said about his money. So, therefore, he became a free agent here recently when they released him. He made a decision to go to Kansas City because he looked at Andy Reid and Andy Reid said to him, I can do wonders with you because you can still play. Mm. He already got his money, so that's out the way, Laura. You don't have to worry about that. The respect level. I coach Staley. I coach Westbrook. I coach Shady McCoy. And you see what I'm doing with this young fella from LSU. I'm bringing you here to somewhat split time and mentor him. Mm. Nothing's wrong with Le'Veon as a player. Well, how many snaps he gets on Sunday? Who knows? But he will be effective at some point in time for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, you mentioned that young guy, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, hasn't been as productive in the red zone. Le'Veon Bell, very productive in the red zone, so you wonder how that factors in as well. The Broncos actually just one of three teams that Bell has never faced before, so he gets an opportunity to see them for the first time. All right, let's get to some more games in Week 7. The 49ers taking on the Patriots. And however you feel about the trade now, both of these quarterbacks appear to be playing it safe in their offensive schemes. We're talking about Jimmy Garoppolo and Cam Newton. And as I mentioned, Cam Newton trails only Drew Brees in terms of fewest air yards per pass attempt, while Jimmy Garoppolo ranks as the fourth fewest on this list. He also joins Joe Burrow as the only starting QB without 30 air yard completions this season. So, Marcus and Key on the Patriots in this one. Mina is picking the 49ers. But, Mina, let's talk about Cam. Obviously coming off of his worst game this season for the Patriots, certainly coming off of some missed time ahead of that, not a whole lot of practice time. But how important is it for him to have a bounce-back game against the 49ers?
It's huge. He's actually coming off of a couple of bad games, Laura. And while San Francisco does have a good defense, I actually think they present a real opportunity for this Patriots offense that's been significantly better against zone defenses. And there's some obvious reasons for that. Those receivers can't separate at all against man. But I also think Josh McDaniels is really good at dialing up mismatches against zone, getting Julian Edelman on linebackers. And you saw that in the Seattle game, which was Cam's best performance of the season. Him hitting those cover three beaters, the deep crossers, the wheel routes. They can do that against San Francisco because I don't think that Robert Saleh coach defense is going to deviate from their tendencies. They're going to do what they do, play zone coverage. It's up to Cam to deliver, execute, and beat them with the game plan that I know they can have.
Mina's right about that. It's up to Cam, and I believe Cam will bounce back. If you go back on the timeline and you think about it, from the COVID issues to the point where he played last week and didn't look very good, he had about a practice and a half. In that session, who knows what was going on in that practice and a half that he had? You got to think, okay, so he had a poor game last week against Denver, not so great against the Raiders out of Las Vegas. Then when you think about the Seattle game, you have to say Seattle and Miami are the games that you're looking for in Cam Newton. And I think he will do it against San Francisco. He knows the importance. He knows what the whispers are saying out there about his ability and his play. He understands that. And I think a lot of people, Marcus, they look at him, and one of the first things that come to mind is he's injury prone. He missed all of last year. Outside of that, he had about five games that he missed due to injury in his entire career except for 2019.
Key, that's a great point. Listen, we make a big deal about Cam performance because we know how much is riding on Cam performing well in this particular system, in this particular offense, regarding his future. And we saw Jimmy G get benched by Kyle Shanahan, come back the next week and bounce back. I fully expect the same thing from Cam in a bounce back game. And Key talked about the time missed. This is the thing with me when we start talking about the New England Patriots. He has now the ability to prepare. And when you have the ability to prepare with Bill Belichick every single day in the building, on the practice field, that is so different than trying to keep up and get everything understood from the standpoint of doing Zooms or just being a part of team functions when you don't know if you're playing or not playing at all. So the time with him and Josh McDaniels to get back on the field, get things corrected. We heard Dan talk about some of the quarterback mechanical things that can get fixed right away. I look forward to seeing Cam perform against San Francisco because this is one of the chapters in a 17-week season, 16-17-week season, where we'll judge Cam Newton's future based on not only the bad games, how he bounced back from those bad games, and is he a quarterback you feel like you can go further with into the future. I look forward to seeing him perform because these are for Cam, these games have more significance, I would say, than any other quarterback in the league. Based on him being out last year, coming signing with New England, playing under this deal that he's playing with, he has a lot to continue to prove as far as getting back in the swing of things, and I look forward to seeing him perform.
Mina, are we giving Kyle Shanahan enough credit? He's kept this 49ers team afloat despite being decimated by injuries, dealing with some issues with Jimmy G. Certainly, yeah. He didn't play great when he came back from injury and then looked a lot better after that. What do you think about Shanahan's job so far?
I think Shanahan's done a fantastic job, and I think last week was a great example of that. Jimmy G is proven to not be a quarterback who really elevates his offense. That game was basically quarterback-proof. I mean, he'll deliver those underneath throws accurately, but, you know, Kyle's not asking Jimmy to do much more, and I think that's going to be the case against this New England defense. If I'm New England, if I'm Bill, I look at how Miami defended Jimmy G successfully, right? And of course, Brian Flores comes from Bill's tree. I take away the middle of the field. I force him to throw it outside. That New England secondary, they are disciplined, they are smart. This presents a very difficult challenge for Jimmy. I think Kyle's gonna take the ball out of his hands.
Yeah, Jimmy Garoppolo, guys, actually the seventh quarterback to both start for and against Bill Belichick. You wonder what he's got to prove maybe against Bill.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
NFC West showdown between the Seahawks and the Cardinals. News coming down from the Seahawks that Jamal Adams will be out of this game. So certainly something to watch either way. But these Seahawks 5-0, and Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson have some comparisons. Russ talking about Kyler and this matchup. Take a listen.
Well, I think Kyler's been special since he came in the league. He's made so many plays, but I think he has so much command. He's a phenomenal football player. He can really throw it. He can spin it. He can run around. I mean, he's quick as a cat. He's just moving around like crazy. I got to know him a little bit through the draft process and got a lot of respect for him and his competitiveness. And we're going to get to play against each other for many years, and it's going to always be a lot of battles. So, you know, I'm proud to see just his work ethic and success and doing it for the shorter guys. But he's been special for sure.
I love it. Doing it for the shorter guys. And by the way, all three of you picking the Seahawks. But, Key, I want to talk about Kyler Murray. We saw him winning in Monday Night Football against the Cowboys. But what's your level of confidence in Kyler against the Seahawks?
I don't have a strong one at all. I think Seattle's a better football team. I know Seattle's defense is not as strong as they used to be in the past. But when you look at Kyler Murray and you look at what he did against the Dallas Cowboys, he hit the big long one to Christian Kirk. There's no question about that. But if he doesn't connect on that in the air, he's probably sitting at around 8 for 25 for barely 100 yards. And quarterback's supposed to be a quarterback. Yes, he did some phenomenal things in terms of running the ball, but do you really want Kyler Murray running the ball as much as he has been? Because we complain about Cam Newton. We complain about what Robert Griffin III did. We complain about Lamar Jackson. Can you sustain and win this way, this style, in the National Football League? Because at some point, somebody's going to get a hold of him.
Mm. He's real fast, but you're right. All right, go ahead, Mina.
I mean, I'm not complaining about him running if he's peeling off 8-plus yards a carry and it's working. I have to think, for Russell Wilson in that Seahawks defense, Kyler Murray coming to town feels a little bit like Terminator facing T-1000. He's like the younger, faster model. Can't throw it like Russell. We all agree with that, but he is terrifying on his feet and key. This is not a very good Seahawks defense. I will say this. They've been a little bit better in recent weeks, which is weird because it seems counterintuitive, right? They haven't had Jamal Adams. They're probably not going to have him. They're actually definitely not going to have him in this game, but they've gone back to playing a little bit more the way they have in the past. Less blitzing, more too high, keep everything in front of them. And I actually think that's a pretty effective strategy against Murray. Key in this game, contain on the outsides, get pressure up the middle. Jaron Reed's been very good. That's where you want to get to Kyler, on the interior. Don't try chasing around. You're not going to catch him. There is not a single player on that Seahawks defense that's as fast as Kyler Murray. Don't let him outrun you. Just keep him in front of you.
Mina, to that point, early in this game, who's going to steal a possession, to me, is key. Because if you let Kyler get going, then it can be a downhill, it could be an uphill climb for you defensively. But if you give yourself a little leeway, what do we talk about with the guys that Key mentioned? You get a lead on Lamar Jackson. The question has always been, can they come back from a lead? Are they built to do that? You would say AZ could because they have D-Hop and Fitzgerald and Christian Kirk. But I'm sure Russ and Pete Carroll wants to get out to an early lead to make Kyler Murray have to push the ball down the field, because as you're running, that clock is running as well.
Yeah, guys, quick reminder, Pete Carroll was serving as the Patriots head coach when Cliff Kingsbury first stepped on the Texas Tech campus. I can't talk. I'm so excited about this. Back in 1999. Anyway, let's get to one more thing before we go. Mina, you go first.
All right, so one matchup that I'm especially excited. Well, I feel bad saying this, but the Cowboys' offensive line is decimated, and Chase Young is healthy again. Zach Martin's not playing. I mean, kid's gonna eat, right? The whole defensive line is gonna eat in this game. Pray for Andy Dalton, everyone.
Yo, I know everybody is talking to the Packers, and this being a bounce back game because of the success they had offensively. Green Bay, be careful. Deshaun Watson is balling, and he's putting up crazy numbers, and they actually had an opportunity and probably should have won the game against the Tennessee Titans. Don't think this a bounce-back game. Deshaun balling for Houston now.
Yeah, Marcus, I'm rooting for this young man, Sam Darnold, to get back on the field and try to get something going. I know last year he was seeing ghosts. This year he's hearing Trevor Lawrence. If he goes out there and he just plays enough to calm the noise, then he'll be okay. I know Adam Gase has slowed him down a little bit, but just get out there, take care of business, and don't pay attention to the noise.
You know, the funny thing is, one of our camera guys in here is a Jets fan, and he asked me if we were talking about the Jets today, and I said, no, don't worry. We're not going to do that to you. And then, Key, you talked about the Jets, and you talked about Sam Darnold.
You didn't tell me not
so
to
I'm
do
just
that.
Apologizing.
You didn't say don't do it.
I didn't
it
mean
positive.
To lie about that. We talked about the Jets. I'm sorry. We'll see you next week on NFL Live. Enjoy Week 7 action. We'll see you later.